Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. Your heart pumps approximately 2,000 gallons of blood throughout the body every day. As the hardest working muscle in your body and the circulatory system's main control center, your heart requires a significant amount of energy to function properly. That energy is made available with the help of a nutrient called coenzyme Q10, which plays a role in supporting blood vessel health. CoQ10 is present and vitally needed in all human cells in the body. This compound is made naturally in the body in sufficient amounts for maintaining health while you are young, from youth to around age 20. But the problem is that as we age, our body's ability to produce CoQ10 is reduced. As a result, dietary supplementation with CoQ10 can help optimize the levels of CoQ10 in the body. Based on a large volume of favorable research, CoQ10 has become one of today's most popular dietary supplements. What role can CoQ10 play in your health and longevity? Today we will talk with a leading scientific authority on coenzyme Q10, Dr. Bruce Lipschutz, PhD, professor of chemistry at the University of California at Santa Barbara. We'll be right back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our featured guest today on Health and Longevity is Dr. Bruce Lipschutz, PhD. Dr. Lipschutz began his academic career at the University of California at Santa Barbara in 1979, where today he continues as professor of chemistry. His program in organic synthesis focuses on new reagents and methodologies, mainly in organometallic chemistry. While these contributions tend to fall within the area of traditional organic synthesis, more recently his group has shifted in large measure towards what is called green chemistry. Dr. Lipschutz is recognized as a leading authority on the compound coenzyme Q10, which we'll be talking about today. Well, Dr. Lipschutz, thanks so much for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
My pleasure.
Tell us, first of all, what really is coenzyme Q10?
Sure. Well, CoQ10 is a pure compound. It's an individual molecule. It's found in essentially every cell in the human body. Very important compound for what it does in the body, everything from responsible for human respiration, energy production. It's a fantastic antioxidant to protect ourselves, and it's a very important compound which we need to be aware of and to think about supplementing with in the human diet.
Now, you say supplementing, and some people, when they hear coenzyme Q10, a lot of the lay people think, oh, that's a vitamin, but it actually is not a vitamin, is it?
Well, there's a subtle difference between vitamins and coenzymes. Right? A vitamin is something for sure that we need to take in through the diet. A coenzyme is vitamin-like in the sense that it acts the same way in the body, but it's actually produced by the body, and therefore technically it's not a vitamin, and therefore it's called a coenzyme.
Now, where in the body do we find coenzyme Q10?
Well, CoQ10 is localized in the mitochondria of our cells. So in other words, there are these little sort of organelles that are found within each human cell. And people may have heard about this as the so-called powerhouses of our cells, where we derive our our energy. And so CoQ10 localizes in the membranes, the outer portion of the mitochondria, and from there it does its biochemistry, its essential biochemistry, which is critical for life as we know it on this planet.
Now, you said it is not a vitamin because our body manufactures it, and but as we get older, isn't there some reduction in the manufacturing of CoQ10 in the body?
Yes, absolutely, and that's one of the critical points, and that is that as a compound, nature gave us enough to anticipate survival to roughly, up until modern medicine, about the age of 40 or so. And so over time, we lose the quantity of CoQ10 in our cells, mainly because in order to make it, it's literally a 21-step synthesis, a biochemical synthesis. And as we age, the efficiency of that synthesis drops. And so rather than living, of course, to 40, we're now going into our 80s and 90s, and so the level of CoQ10 in our cells continues to drop as we age, and therefore we suffer from things like less energy.
So as a result, that's where it comes in, where you think supplementation of coenzyme Q10 could be very beneficial to us. Who should really be taking it in the form of a supplement?
Well, the reality is that when we reach our prime, which is normally thought to be somewhere around the age of 20, the level of CoQ10 each year continues to drop. So the argument could be made that virtually everyone on the planet should start taking CoQ10 at roughly the age of 20, because everyone is on the downside of that curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's relatively early in life, but again, we have to consider from that perspective, actually, this sort of makes sense.
Now, when a lot of the lay people and our listeners hear about CoQ10, often they think of heart disease prevention, a role in heart disease. Tell us about what the connection is of coenzyme Q10 and heart disease.
Sure. Well, heart disease, of course, is a catch-all sort of phrase. And it turns out that because CoQ10 is so intimately involved in energy production, that it's about 30-40% of the CoQ10 in the body is actually localized in the heart, because the heart obviously has to continue to work for the lifetime of the body. And so CoQ10 is an essential ingredient for this energy production of the heart. And of course, as that level drops, we're more suspect to and susceptible to heart disease. And of course, that's what's happening throughout our lifetime, right? People who have suffered from heart disease and then have had, after they pass, the heart's analyzed. There's a lot of research on this. It's been found that the levels of CoQ10 in those diseased hearts is dramatically lower as one gets into later lifetimes. So the correlation with heart muscle strength and heart disease is really quite strong. And in fact, CoQ10 used to be a pharmaceutical in Japan for many years, until it went over the counter.
Now, oftentimes when people have heart disease, it could be related to having high cholesterol levels. And of course, doctors most often prescribe statin drugs to help to lower the cholesterol and get it into better range for reducing the heart disease risk. But there is a problem with that in regards to coenzyme Q10, isn't there?
Yes, there is. The statins are truly wonder drugs, and they are extremely effective at dropping the levels of cholesterol as advertised. And I think everyone is probably fairly familiar with that. Many, many millions of people take them, of course. And unfortunately, what many people don't realize is that the way in which these statins work is they inhibit the biosynthesis of cholesterol, and that, of course, results in the lowering of the levels. As it turns out, the same exact pathway leads also to the side chain of CoQ10, which therefore, when one takes a statin, is not only dropping, let's say, cholesterol levels by 30, 40, 50%, but is also killing the production in the cells of the much-needed CoQ10, especially for heart muscle strength. So while one is taking a statin, the curve for the decrease in the levels of CoQ10 in the cells of a person on a statin is now dropping even greater than would naturally be seen in a person who otherwise has normal levels of cholesterol. So in other words, one really has to supplement with CoQ10 in order to make up for that cleavage of that pathway, which unfortunately kills the CoQ level as it does benefit people by dropping cholesterol levels. So that's absolutely tied together biochemically and biosynthetically.
So you're saying that people who are taking these statin medications should be supplementing in addition with the coenzyme Q10. Why aren't more medical doctors and cardiologists, particularly who are prescribing these medications, recommending this to their patients?
Well, this is a historical issue, as it turns out, and I can tell you from personal experience, when I asked my doctor the same exact question, his response was that this compound, coenzyme Q10, is officially called a nutraceutical. It's not a pharmaceutical here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, I'm so busy keeping abreast of all the developments on the pharmaceutical side, I just don't have time to pay attention to the other things, such as nutraceuticals and coenzyme Q10. When I explained to him the relationship, even though he sent me his bill the same way, I think he got it, and he realized, as others are now starting to in cardiology, how important this is to prescribe just over-the-counter, that one make up for the deficiencies, because the side effects of taking the statins are well known. Muscle aches, exercise intolerance, these sorts of side effects are very common, and it's a very simple matter to take care of that by taking appropriate amounts of a simple dietary supplement, coenzyme Q10.
Well, statins are one type of medication and drug. What about the interactions between coenzyme Q10 and other common drugs?
Well, this is the good news, and that is that the reality is that CoQ10 doesn't have a sort of contraindication with most other medications. In fact, it's in the opposite direction. In other words, in addition to the statins, let's say, where one knows that the biosynthetic pathway is problematic in terms of CoQ generation, it's also the case with other sorts of drugs that are very common. For example, beta blockers, where people suffer from high blood pressure, that will also inhibit the biosynthesis of CoQ10. If people, for example, have diabetes and are taking, say, oral hypoglycemics, also the level of CoQ10 will be dropping in the body. So in most cases, it's not about CoQ10 influencing these drugs, it's the other way around. Now, it turns out there is a situation or two where it's best to consider not taking CoQ10. Special circumstances, for example, if one's going in for an operation and one is being fed, let's say, a blood thinner like warfarin.
Mm-hmm.
Warfarin has a structure that's, warfarin keeps the blood thin because you don't want to provide, for example, something that's akin to vitamin K, the clotting vitamin, because that would work against the blood thinner. And CoQ10 has a related structure, so one should probably not take CoQ10 going in for an operation. Other than that, the circumstances would be very special. For example, if one is undergoing cancer treatment by radiation. Radiation works by generating radicals that go after cancer cells. The radicals that are being produced, of course, are now going to be acted upon by CoQ10 in its antioxidant form, and that defeats the purpose, therefore, of the radiation treatment. So those two circumstances, which are relatively special, would suggest that one not take CoQ10 during that time. But other than that, it's actually the other drugs that will impact the level of CoQ10, further arguing for supplementation.
Now, of course, a lot of listeners now are probably asking the questions, well, how much CoQ10 should we be taking? And I know that could be individualistic depending on a person's lifestyle, but what are the recommendations? And I know there's some conflicting people reading one source, they say something, another doctor says something else. What is a recommended dosage for CoQ10?
Well, the reason why there's so much confusion is because there's no simple answer that I think anyone, doctor or otherwise, can give you in this case. Because as you correctly point out, there are many variables: age, weight, family, medical history. For example, is there heart disease in the family? Are we talking to someone who's a terrific athlete and uses a lot of energy for that purpose? Or are we talking to someone who's not quite as active? So all of these factors can play into determining how much one should really take. What I can offer is a sort of rule of thumb in that regard. And I would say that, for example, if somebody was a 40-year-old in reasonable health, the rule of thumb suggests that one would take something about 10 times the age in milligrams. So for a 40-year-old in reasonably good health, a ballpark figure would be 400 milligrams a day. It's very important to spread this out. Try to take a distributed amount with each, let's say, meal, because it's much more effective than taking it at once. Now, of course, as one ages, that amount will go up. If one starts taking a statin, that amount would go up. If one is into strong, let's say, exercise regimens, that amount would go up. But the good news is there's no side effect, right? The implications of taking CoQ10 are actually very good in the sense it doesn't accumulate in the liver like vitamin E. So the worst thing that could probably happen if one took, let's say, too much is you might have too much energy.
Well, that's not too bad.
No, it's not too bad at all. It's really a blessing that we have access to this compound. We're extremely fortunate, given all that it does. But you really can't make a mistake unless you take non-therapeutically significant levels. So, for example, oftentimes one goes to a practicing MD who may not be familiar with it, and the standard response would be, well, that's fine. Why don't you start with, say, 30 milligrams? Well, for somebody who's 30, 40, 50 years of age, that just has no impact. And the reason is that we only absorb about 10 to 15% of what we take anyway. And so as a result of that, most of it is excreted by the body. And so we need to really take therapeutically significant numbers, which is why it's in the hundreds. And one can work from there and literally titrate how one feels. If you notice an impact, that's probably a good level. If you don't see anything happening, maybe you take a little bit more. And if you forget to take it and you say, well, I don't remember, so what should I do? You take another one, what's the worst that could happen? You have a little bit extra energy.
Now, you mentioned that so about 10% of it is absorbed as far as the bioavailability?
Well, it depends on whether you take it, for example, with meals. So if you take it with meals and it's in soft gel form, mm-hmm. that's about 15% absorbed, a little bit less if you don't take it with meals.
Okay.
There are some forms of CoQ10 on the market that claim to have higher bioavailability, maybe as much as 30%. Of course, those being proprietary are much more expensive, and so one has to kind of determine which way to go on this. But between, I would say, 10 to 15 for most of the soft gels in the stores. Online, there you can get probably up to 30% with certain selected formulations, but one has to decide if it's really worth paying for that, or you just take a little bit more of the other material.
One of the ones you hear a lot about is ubiquinol.
Yes.
And being like the harder form of it, or the better form. What's your thoughts on that?
Okay, well, there's a lot of debate about this, and ubiquinol is the reduced form of CoQ10. And so in the body, when we take, for example, CoQ10, as we just purchased from the store, the body equilibrates that into the two reactive forms, the one we take, which is called CoQ10, the oxidized form, and then the body converts a lot of that into the reduced form called ubiquinol. The ubiquinol form is considered hotter, quote-unquote, because that is the antioxidant form. That mm-hmm. is an extremely powerful antioxidant which goes after the so-called bad radicals that are produced just in the course of breathing and oxidation chemistry that we do in life. And so taking that form, the argument goes, will be placing the hotter form more directly into the body, and that should be therefore beneficial. I don't know that, the evidence is overwhelming to that effect. What I can tell you is that the cost for companies to produce that relative to CoQ10 translates into anywhere from 4 to 6 times the cost in the stores, and it depends. Some people, I don't respond to that difference. I stick with CoQ10. However, there have been a number of women that I know who have tried CoQ10 in its reduced form, ubiquinol, and they say it's much more effective than taking the direct CoQ10. So the answer is it's worth trying, but if one sees no difference, then of course you might as well stick with the less expensive oxidized form. But I think this is it's really on the basis of individuals, and I don't know that one should necessarily switch over automatically and pay these high prices, at least today, by what's sold in the stores. So it probably should be just tested and see how much better it does, if at all.
Now, again, what is the name of the less expensive form of CoQ10?
The less expensive one is just CoQ10. The more expensive one is the hotter form, the reduced form called ubiquinol.
Tell us about some of the other human ailments that might CoQ10 might be good for.
Well, that's an important question, especially after we've just been talking about the reduced form, ubiquinol. And the one that probably gets a lot of attention, and rightfully so, is stress. Stress, we all face it. Stress is just a normal part of life. But we also appreciate that stress, being an oxidative process, ages us. Mm-hmm. Stress is well known. The oxygen radicals and the so-called bad radicals, the reactive oxygen species that are generated under stress, are generated in greater amounts. And so when we supplement with CoQ10, much of which is converted to the antioxidant form, you can see that nature figured out why we need the reduced form in the body. And that's because, as an antioxidant, especially under stress, it will quench out, it will destroy those radicals that will age us by going after our DNA. And not only our DNA, but it's been studied. That is to say, the effect of reduced CoQ10 has been studied on many different kinds of biomolecules. So we're talking about peptides and lipids and ATP synthase, and the important biomolecules have been tested in the presence of reduced CoQ10. And in all cases, they effectively get, right, reduced. When you don't have it present, you get the oxidation of these biomolecules, but the reduction, right, the reduced form of CoQ10 gets those radicals virtually 100%. So it's been oftentimes felt that that particular study is referred to as the sort of fountain of youth, because it prevents, in a stressful situation, the aging process to a significant degree. So I think that's a really good reason, right, because we all face this stress. It's sort of like an ace in the hole. Stress can be all kinds of situations, and academia could be for final exams. It could be somebody who has to take a long drive and you need mental clarity. There are all kinds of stressful situations, and by taking additional CoQ10, that's going to help us deal with those so-called bad radicals, and probably one of the best reasons to supplement with CoQ10.
Well, Dr. Lipschutz, we're coming to the end of the interview here, and we're talking to you today from the University of California at Santa Barbara, where you have done research on coenzyme Q10. Tell us about some of the CoQ10 research that you're doing there at UCSB.
Sure. It's been now a number of years, and we were in the course of developing some new synthetic methodology, which it turns out was applicable to the synthesis of this dietary supplement, coenzyme Q10. And we weren't aware, at least in the beginning, of how important this was. And so we actually developed the world's most efficient synthesis of this molecule. Now, by comparison, virtually all of the CoQ10 made today is by fermentation processes. In large tanks, yeast go in, nutrients are fed in, and the CoQ10 is harvested by this type of approach to synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
We in the lab created an amazingly efficient synthesis that can very effectively compete with that. And the interesting part to that is we actually used tobacco waste to get one of the main components that we fed into the synthesis and could be outsourced, for example, from India. And by virtue of that and another component also which could be outsourced, the synthesis literally reduced to one single step.
Hmm.
And so when I brought this to the attention of the pharmaceutical area, in particular, for example, to a process chemist at Merck, and I said, which one wins? Which one is the most economical, the fermentation process or the chemical synthesis of ours? And they did that analysis in process research at Merck, and the answer was, we win.
Great.
So it's really rewarding. We haven't gone further with it, but we do have available a very effective way to make this important dietary supplement very economically.
Well, Dr. Lipchitz, we want to thank you so much for being with us today on Health and Longevity, and we wish you the best of success as you continue your research on this very important compound, coenzyme Q10. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Now, some of our listeners have said that they have missed a show or would like to re-listen to a previous show of Health and Longevity. And if you would like to listen to past shows, go to our website at healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week's program. Until next time, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.